Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. The Hall of Famer Chris Carter is looking for something.
He found
all of it. He found everything he was looking for.
Let's go, baby.
That is Nick Wright. We are all in a great mood on this Thursday morning.
Nice pants you got on there, Jenna.
Thank you.
Got some little zippers across.
No, you don't need to stand.
Why? He said...
Don't listen to him. It's your show. Don't listen to him. You tell us. Let's start with Jenna Wolf. Jenna Wolf's looking hot today. Got some pants on, new. Let's go. Let's get this cranking.
All that being said, he's wearing pants, too. So
well,
we're
she's
in a
cold.
Good place.
She didn't like me saying she's
big
hot.
Show today. D-Wade turned back the clock with a clutch performance. Celtics keep on losing for some reason, but we're going to start
not that good.
With LeBron's response to those questioning
good.
How much he's got left in the tank.
I think
Lakers looking to make up some ground out west, hosting the Pelicans. Here we go. Pick this up with 2 minutes left. L.A. up by three. LeBron with the basket and one. Lakers up six. Under a minute to go. Lakers up three again. LeBron forcing the Jrue Holiday turnover. What do we call that? Oh, defense. LeBron making highlights here from the corner. One leg, watch it, nails the dagger. 33 points, 10 assists for the King. Lakers win, beating the Pelicans 125-119. All right, Nick Wright, what did you make of LeBron and the Lakers last night?
Well, on the Lakers, and listen, it was a must-win game. The season's over with a loss there. You can stop counting losses. I know I said they had 10 losses to play with 3 losses ago, but it wouldn't have been, no, now they have 6. No, you can't go Pelicans, Grizzlies, Pelicans and go for 3. So they stay alive. LeBron looked the best he's looked since his return, and not coincidentally, it was the fewest minutes he's played over the last 8 games, and he was fresh at the end to do that. And Kuzma and Ingram, the two guys who I've been told are just emotionally scarred from being involved in trade rumors, they were both very good, and the play we didn't show was the play right before LeBron went on that 3-play run, where it's a 1-point game, and LeBron lets Ingram take it. Ingram goes right to the cup, gets a layup, gives him the 3-point separation that then LeBron adds to a couple times down the court. It was a critical win. It was a great win in the way the guys did it, where Ingram, Kuzma do play well, LeBron plays great, and Rondo does everything except for shoot the ball well. And it gives the Lakers a bit of a, all right, We've gathered ourselves a bit. The rest of the Western Conference, Kings lost, Clippers lost, helped them a bit. And now they've got Friday, a game against the best team in basketball thus far this season, the Milwaukee Bucks. And you see how much this was progress and how much this was Anthony Davis, who was en route to scoring about 40, not playing in the last 14 minutes of the game, and how much that helped him.
I'll start my commentary. Forget about the compliments. I'll start with the Anthony Davis. And the reason why you get this type of result is because Anthony Davis, they decided to sit him at the end. But he could have scored as many points as he wanted against the Lakers.
Correct.
Did the Lakers need to win this game? Of course they did. Have we been counting the games as far as how many games can they give away? You can't count them anymore because the Lakers can lose every game that they play. They have shown that losing to the Hawks. They have shown that losing to the Magic. They have shown that losing to the Pelicans without AD. And they would have lost last night, I believe, if AD continues to play.
Game.
Yes, absolutely. At the end, they did have a system for what they were going to do. I still believe that not only the young players were scarred by all the, because that's real. Last night's game, they did show up big, but the veteran players. And the reason why the veteran players, I believe in Rondo and Lance, played better because they had a clear role for which they were going to be playing. If you're looking at positives, I would look at the rotation. I would look at the veteran players, the roles that they were played. Rondo starting the game, I believe that's a better lineup, even though they're very, very small. I believe that Bullock should come off the bench. And Rondo should be starting with Lonzo being hurt. But, man, the Lakers are not out of the woods. They got plenty of problems. LeBron, 3-for-8 from the free throw line. That right there continues to be a problem, continues to be worse since he's come back from his injury.
But let me ask you this. You said the Lakers can lose every game that they play. If they play the way they played last night, if LeBron plays the way he played, could they win every game
that
they're going
to
play?
They're going to have to play better than they played last night. But when LeBron plays the way he did last night, yes, they can beat anybody. They can beat anybody short of, in a one-game sample, anybody. And this is the reason why I think the Lakers still, with all their problems, if they get a first-round series against the Nuggets, I think they're very live in that because it will have meant they are playing well up to that point by getting to the first round series, by even getting into the playoffs. And I don't think the Nuggets match up well against them, even though we have seen what a quality big man can do against the Lakers right now when they are not starting a big man. They went super small, as C mentioned. They left Reggie Bullock in the starting lineup and brought Rondo back into it. I think you almost have to start Rondo because he gets re-engaged. Rondo is a guy that will float and is a guy that if he is not happy with his role can be not only not a positive but can be a negative. But the other key parts of this game were this is the first time they weren't playing uphill in forever. The first game without a 10-point deficit at some point since LeBron's first game back from injury, that Clippers win. This was the first game that they were either in control of or just had a small deficit the entirety of the game. And so at no point was there the opportunity to let go of the rope, which is what we have seen in these other games. But no, they're not out of the woods. But right now the Lakers are happy to just still be in the woods.
Right.
They're happy to still be playing relevant games. If they would have last night, in my opinion, fallen to 29-32, to me, that's a wrap. They'd be four games back of the eight seed with 21 to play, and you could write them off.
Take out what Anthony Davis could have done. What you saw LeBron actually do last night, despite what we've been talking about him and saying about him, do you think he has enough in the tank to be able to do that again and again to make a playoff run?
It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. They have to also have Rondo play well, because I believe the Lakers are better when LeBron is not the primary ball handler, given the team that they have now. It's different if they have Lonzo in there. Lonzo's a lot better shooter and can get more spacing on the court than Rondo. But when Rondo is distributing the ball, LeBron has to be an elite scorer for this team. Now, people will say, well, is that really his strong suit? When he's in the playoffs, that's his strong suit. And if LeBron doesn't score 28 to 40 points, they don't have enough scoring within the Lakers to be able to win in that very, very competitive Western Conference. So I like Rondo being the predominantly ball handler because the Lakers, when they don't have that and LeBron is setting up the offense, it becomes harder for them to be able to score with the elite teams in the NBA.
And because I think they should leave Rondo in the starting lineup as well. Where I disagree with you is it's not Bullock I would take out of the lineup, because I do want Bullock, since he came over, shooting 52% from three on passes from LeBron James. Like, he is the shooter the team didn't get beforehand. He's limited in a lot of other ways, but he can hit knockdown open threes. I would rather they put Kuzma or Ingram, one of those two guys, to the super sixth man role, because that bench unit.
I'm sure at this point, after everything they've been through, neither one of those young players was going to respond to that. Not only am I getting ready to be traded, all these rumors about me, now I've been a starter, now they're getting ready to put me on the bench. They don't have enough experience. You need a veteran. If you're going to take a starter, you much prefer him to be a veteran player who understands where you can go to him and be like, listen, you're more valuable with this second unit compared to these young guys who are trying to gain credibility as far as their game is concerned.
Well, I understand that, and it's a good point that for either one of those guys, it would be a shot to the ego, at least temporarily. But they know they're better than Reggie Bullock. Reggie Bullock would be in their place in the starting lineup. It would be about our second unit, last night notwithstanding, is repeatedly getting killed. We need a guy that can initiate offense. I think Ingram could do that. But sidebar from that to your question about LeBron. LeBron last night, he had his burst. I still don't think he has his stamina. I don't think he's in the shape he wants to be in for the end of the season. But you saw he had his lift back. You saw this was the healthiest he has been. The stamina is going to take time, but I don't think the groin's bothering him at all anymore. And they're going to need that and a lot more over these last 21 games.
All right, so the Lakers get the win at home last night. Four of the next five are at home, so perhaps a little good news for them looking forward. Coming up on the other side, the downward spiral for the Boston Celtics continues. That is next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back.
Hey guys, it's Nick Wright, and I want to tell you about Indochino, a new way for men to upgrade their wardrobe without breaking the bank. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe by taking the premium, made-to-measure experience direct to the consumer. They've created a superior alternative to off-the-rack clothing at ready-to-wear prices. Indochino allows customers to step into the shoes of a designer to create custom suits, shirts, chinos, blazers, and overcoats. They select from hundreds of fabrics and endless options, including lapels, pockets, buttons, linings, and monograms. Indochino couldn't make it any easier to start looking good. Just follow these easy steps. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in the next couple of weeks. My listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. That's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Now, back to the show.
Boston Celtics in just a second, but first, you guys catch this. College hoops, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Terrence Davis taking off down the floor, skies it in for the dunk.
Tennessee won this game on a great play late, but this is a great play by the Ole Miss kid.
Tennessee, the defender, he thinks he's going to lay it up off the backboard, so he goes to try
pin
to
it.
Yeah. Hey, guy, he getting ready to finish this one on you. Yeah. That's what they do now.
NBA now, Hawks and T-Wolves. Trae Young lobbing one up to John Collins.
Trae Young was spectacular last night. Third rookie ever with back-to-back 35.5 assist games.
We've been saying that a lot lately.
Joins Iverson and a guy you might have heard of.
NBA got to do something about those uniforms. Man, I thought I was watching the Clippers or something. It's the Hawks.
And the Pelicans
baby
look
blue?
Like the Nuggets. And the Pelicans look like they were in the old Nuggets.
Come on,
jersey.
Stop.
Go ahead.
Clippers,
so.
Jazz, your guy Donovan Mitchell, see?
Donovan Mitchell almost blew this game for them, taking a terrible three late in the game when they were up four with 12 on the shot clock. I was watching it because it's very important that the Clippers lose, and they did lose. Good win,
Utah,
by the Jazz.
Even though we don't talk about them a lot, still a dangerous team in the West. Mm-hmm.
They are still celebrating this down in Miami. Final play of the night. Heat, Warriors, Dwayne Wade drains the clutch three at the buzzer to beat the Golden State Warriors.
Man, Miami was up 24 early in this game.
Yes.
But then all of a sudden, the Warriors chipped away. This was D-Wade's second straight three. In between those two threes was one missed Durant free throw when Durant had been spectacular. A lot of luck involved in this one, but a great moment for Flash.
Dwayne Wade made some big buckets coming down the stretch. At least three of them. That just happened to be the lucky.
Guys, maybe it is the hair. You didn't like it. Maybe it's the hair. Moving on to the Celtics now, who were looking to snap their three-game losing streak. Mission not accomplished. Celtics played well, but not well enough to beat the Blazers. Damian Lillard put up 33 as Portland took this one 97-92. The Celtics have now lost four in a row. They've lost six of their last eight, and they've lost ground in the East, falling deeper down into that fifth spot. Here's Kyrie after the game.
1-2 is pretty much locked up, 1-2-3. So, just play to, as long as we get there. I can't wait for this. All this other BS about regular season and keep getting better and talking over and over and over and again about what we can do to keep getting better in the regular season. I just want to be at the highest level playing. I mean, that's what I'm here for.
What's your confidence level in the team going forward?
What do you mean?
Just in terms of, like, you know, you got
a
like
question
20,
is that?
A legitimate question. I mean, I just, you know, how do you feel about this team?
Okay, next question.
Listen, somehow, some way, Kyrie still believes in this team, or at least he's telling the media. He's still optimistic. He still thinks he can turn things around. So it's what we said we wanted to hear out of Kyrie if he was going to be the leader on this team. But how much trouble, realistically, CC, are the Celtics in?
They're in a lot of trouble. We just want him to lie. He was lying right there. That's what we want him to do. He's lying. There's no way that he left this game saying, oh, man, he just did a better interview than what he did after the Toronto game. All right, they can't fool me. I want you to lie. Yeah, man, get up to me. You got confidence in the guy? Absolutely. Because we're supposed to win this game if we give up 97 points to Portland. So it's not a matter of our defense. It's not a matter of us not committing to be able to help each other out. No. They're not a great offensive team now. Now, We were thinking that Boston always, we baked in, going to get great coaching from Brad Stevens. They're going to be a great defensive team. And they got Kyrie to be able to close out the game. We thought that was the winning formula. But right now, they're not a good offensive team, which they've experienced that before. They're not an elite defensive team. And you can tell when they start making substitutions, their pattern is not consistent. And you don't see that togetherness. You don't see, wow, man, they're really deep. You don't see Terry Rozier spring off the bench and play like when we saw him. You don't see those types of things. So the Boston Celtics, to me, are still in trouble. Because the reality of it, when we started the season, Nick, you had a stat 2 days ago. When the season started, Vegas had them.
It was second most wins.
Second most wins.
They were the second highest projected total. It was Golden State 1, Boston 2.
So now we're talking about 20 games left in the season. They're 10 games behind Milwaukee. So, no, man, they got trouble, man. They can only get as high as the 3 seed. Now, they're probably not going to drop it lower than the 5th seed. But when you start the season, the Boston Celtics, and given they haven't had the type of injuries that other teams have had, and you're saying, man, they're 10 games back. No, this is not the type of season, nor is there anything that you're looking at from them, you say, you know something? I'm encouraged about seeing what's going to happen the next couple weeks.
Listen, they have not been an elite team all year. And now they are in their worst stretch of basketball in 3 years. The last time they lost 6 of 8 was January of 2016. The last time they had worse than a 6 of 8 streak as far as losses go was the last really bad Celtics team, the 14-15 Celtics. They've lost 4 in a row for just the second time in this new resurgent era of Celtic basketball and lost 6 of 8 for just the second time in this resurgent era of Celtic basketball. They are who we think they are right now, not who a lot of people thought they would be,
right.
Which is you mentioned, C, that they're not going to fall lower than the 5th seed, and they're not, because there were supposed to only be 5 legitimate teams in the Eastern Conference. One of those teams, Indiana, had its best player rip his quad off the bone, and they're still 3 games ahead of them. I have thought, even though I have been more skeptical of the Celtics than almost anybody, of course they'll catch the Pacers. They're 3 games back of the Pacers. Like, they're as far back of the Pacers as the Lakers are of the playoffs. So the idea that they're just going to magically move above the 5 lines, Kyrie had something really interesting to say there, which is basically they brought me here for the playoffs. I'm here for the big games. I'm ready for the big games. Okay, they're going to need you desperately in those big games because last year, as good as that Celtics playoff run was, they couldn't win on the road. Against Milwaukee, they were 0-3 on the road. Against Philadelphia, 1-1. Against the Cavs, 0-3. So they were 1-7 on the road in the playoffs last year. Right now, they're going to be on the road to start every series they play in.
And Kyrie, to me, is still just such a wannabe. Kyrie, man, wants to be LeBron so bad. That's why he said that. There at no point in Kyrie's career has he said, you know something, I'm here for the playoffs. But he knew LeBron and what they went through with the Cavs. LeBron is here for the playoffs. We don't need the 1st seed. Or we don't need the 2nd seed. Or we don't need the 3rd seed because I'm a better player and I can overcome all those things. Kyrie has never said that. And saying that, when you're just going to disregard these last 20 games, Kyrie, do you really believe in that? Because you said that, oh, don't worry about Toronto. They got smashed by Toronto. So, to me, Kyrie is grabbing at stuff. That's why he called LeBron. And it's a lot of time like your kids. Because Kyrie, he's like a little brother, not a kid, because no one wants to be known as a kid. It's like your kids. When the parents are successful, those kids try to do everything they can not to follow in the footsteps of their successful parents. But ultimately, they envy that success, and they end up trying to emulate everything that you've done. And that's what I see with Kyrie, with some of the things. When he called LeBron, he's trying to find out about leadership. And Kyrie has never said that. You know, oh, I'm here for just the playoffs. That's not why they brought you to Boston, though.
The Boston Celtics, for better or worse, have lost the last 6 games that Kyrie has played in. We've got this narrative sort of brewing that Kyrie, while his numbers are great, do not help this team win. And the talk all week was that maybe the system that he's playing in doesn't work for Kyrie. Is it on the board that Kyrie changes to fit into Brad Stevens' system? Or does Danny Ainge need Brad Stevens to change his system to get his superstar to fit
into
that?
Well, you can't change it midstream. If they are fortunate enough for Kyrie to stay, which I think right now is overwhelmingly unlikely. But let's say he does, then yes, there needs to be a systemic change in Boston to make the best use of your best player. But I will not, I know that they are now in the year 9-2 without Kyrie Irving and 28-23 with Kyrie Irving. I cannot buy into the idea that this team is better without Kyrie,
right,
most notably because we know they have a ceiling in the postseason without Kyrie. I will buy into this notion. They'd be better if Gordon Hayward went home for the rest of the year. Those 21 minutes, Gordon, God bless him. I wish him the best. I hope next year he comes back, looks more like himself. But maybe Tatum and Brown are more the players we thought they would be this year, or a lot of people thought they would be, if those minutes are dispersed amongst them. Marcus Morris is playing the best basketball of his career. Give him a few extra minutes tonight, because Gordon Hayward has shown a few flashes like, oh, maybe he's... No, he's not. Gordon Hayward is not right now a plus when he's on the court for you. Last night, what did he do last night? 28 minutes, three shots, one of three from the field. Like, Gordon Hayward's not helping you. And so this is another game where, by the way, Kyrie can say, see, I'm only worried about the playoffs, and I think what you said about the LeBron stuff's really interesting. Everyone in the East should be trying to avoid that 4-5 area.
Yes.
That 4-5 area means in the first round you play one of the other legitimate teams and you get Milwaukee if you get out of the first round. If you get to the 3 line, which should be the Celtics' goal because the 1 and 2 is gone, you're getting either you're getting probably Brooklyn in the first round. It would be Brooklyn or Charlotte or Detroit, one of those three teams in the first round. And then you might never have to play Milwaukee if Milwaukee gets upset. Like, the regular season really matters in the Eastern Conference this year. It's not last year, and it's not LeBron, which is everyone. I've beaten everyone in the East before I even take the court. Like, these last 21 games matter. And by they got Houston, Golden State, Sacramento, the Lakers, and the Clippers in 5 of their next 6 games after they have Washington coming up.
The best coaches in the league, Jenna, to answer your question about Brad Stevens, they have a variety of ways they can win. I believe that Brad Stevens, when he came up and learning how to coach, coaching at Butler, he never thought he was going to have a superstar. I'm going to have role players. I'm going to have 3-star, 2-star. I might be able to get like a Sheldon Mack. I might be able to get a Gordon Hayward, a 4-star. I might be able to. But his system does not include typically where you're going to go a 1-4. You're going to have one guy have the ball, other 4 guys go on the baseline, and this guy get a bucket. Last night, Golden State, you know what Kevin Durant did? He waved Steph Curry off, waved him off. I'm getting ready to go get a bucket. Every good coach, Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, all these coaches, Popovich, they have a system, but they have variants in the system to have a guy. And for Brad Stevens, for me to put him in the elite class that other people have put him in, hint, hint, Nick Wright and other people, you need to have a system to say, you know something? Clear it out for that guy.
Right.
This guy right here is going to be able to get a bucket for us because every NBA team needs that. You need to have that. I'm going to break glass in emergency. Kyrie Irving has that special gift where he can get his own shot from 28 feet to 3 feet.
And it's Brad Stevens' job not to help Kyrie do that, but to help the other 4 guys on the court when Kyrie is doing that to make the most of the possession, to be in the right spot if it collapses on Kyrie, to figure out where the best lanes are for offensive rebounds, how to get back on defense. Because Kyrie can do that if you were coaching. Doesn't matter. Everybody get out of my way. I'm going to go. It's the other 4 guys when Kyrie does that seem to, they might as well not be there. That's been their problem.
Well, see, if it's not an emergency yet, they're awfully close to it. We'll take a break, switch gears on the other side. Coming up, does Jason Garrett deserve an extension before the Cowboys season starts? That's next on First Things First.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Check out the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Sunday, 3:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral. All right, check out Blazers guard Rodney Hood diving after a loose ball. All the fans in the rich people seats got their drinks knocked over, including...
Watch out, Jada!
Jadakiss!
Man, I had, years and years ago, I had a really, really fun night out in Kansas City with Jadakiss, believe it or not.
I believe that.
I was like, God, I feel like I was 19 years old, maybe 20 years old. Jada's an all-timer now. This guy right here, the guy with the skull cap on or the hat, he got a lot of stuff spilled on him.
You get
he was
free,
not pleased.
Free refills when that happens? Do you get to go up and be like, did you
oh,
see
you
what happened?
Oh, you sit in those seats, you get a Rodney, you get a lot of perks there.
Pour it on.
Yeah, they actually have an attendant that comes to you.
Oh, okay. So Jada gets like, what?
You know,
I get another drink.
See, you know how Jenna could find out? You should take her. So either you got connections with both the local teams. Why don't you take her to one of those games?
Yeah, I took her to a game, and then we sat behind Kevin Durant. And he's sitting up there meme mugging. All right, I'm no basketball player. I'll come up there and bust you in your face. He meme mugging me. Jenna's my date at the game. Hey, bro, what you looking at?
Yeah,
I'm no fanboy.
Because
I'm doing a show with you.
He gave a stink eye the whole game.
Yeah, me and Kevin Durant was cool, man. I like his mom. Talked to his mom. Ever since I've been with you, bro. There's a stench coming off of me.
I know, and now he's going to be playing 41 games a night in New York.
And you can't take Jenna court, so I get the game start too late.
What? It's true.
It does
Working
start after
with Sleepy
my
Hollow.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. Lakers beating up on the Pelicans last night, 125-119. LeBron had 33, but he did get a lot of help in this one. Nick, which teammate impressed you the most in last night's Lakers?
I'm going to give it to Brandon Ingram because at the end of the game, one-point game, a little over a minute left, they sent a double at LeBron. LeBron finds Ingram, trusts Ingram. Ingram goes straight to the cup, gets him a layup. So he gave him a little bit of a cushion, mm-hmm. 3 points, a little over a minute left. He was good throughout. He orchestrated the offense well in the brief time LeBron was on the bench. I give it to Brandon Ingram.
I'm going to go with Rondo because I like someone else being the primary ball handler. It frees LeBron up to be a scorer. And on this team, with the lack of shooters, we need LeBron to be an elite scorer. Rondo was my second favorite.
He had 15 assists last night. He was a great distributor last night.
All right, moving on. We cannot get enough of this. Dwayne Wade with the bank shot, buzzer-beating three-pointer to take down who else but the Golden State Warriors last night. Warriors now just a half game up on Denver. CeCe, should the Warriors be worried about hanging on to that top spot?
The Warriors should be concerned, but Dwayne Wade makes an amazing reaction here because once the shot gets blocked, if he leaves that ball in his hand, they're going to call either a jump ball mm-hmm. or a traveling. He lets the ball go, is able to re-engage and get it, keep 1 foot behind the three-point line. Amazing play by a great player. But, yes, I'd be concerned.
In the Warriors, it's not just about home court in the Western Conference. It's Denver catches them. It's right now in the finals, which they've had home court in the finals every year they've been there. Mm-hmm. Right now, Milwaukee and Toronto would have home court over them. Now, they're not going to catch Milwaukee, but they could catch Toronto. This is the Warriors have been tested in one series since Kevin Durant got there. It was the one series they haven't had home court advantage. Now, it was also against a really good Rockets team.
Aided by an injury, yes.
Sure. It all matters. Even though I don't really trust Denver, the road's a little harder if you're the two seed as well. That seven seed right now, Wes, maybe you're playing the Spurs. It gets harder. It matters for them.
Down by 20 points in the first half, how they played, got to have some concern for the Warriors.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. The Eagles won't put the franchise tag on Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles. GM Howie Roseman says Foles deserves the chance to lead a team. So with Foles set to become a free agent, The Jacksonville Jaguars are reportedly a favorite to land him. Nick, you like that fit?
Not for Nick. I like Nick Foles. He sat right here. He seemed like a really good guy. I like his story. And I think Nick Foles has shown his biggest strength is the biggest moments aren't too big for him. That he doesn't shy in big situations. But I don't think he's, first of all, I don't think he's a guy that over the course of a 16-game season is going to be an above-average NFL starter. I certainly don't think if he were going to be that, it would be in a place like Jacksonville that doesn't have good skill position guys, that has real questions all over their offense, and to me, questions at their team president and their coach. So, no, I don't like the fit for Nick Foles.
I like the fit for Nick Foles because he's definitely a better quarterback than what they have. Now they need to go out and spend some money as far as a wide receiver and a running back who can catch the ball. They've already made the announcement. Leonard Fournette is their workhorse running back. He's also a running back who can't catch the ball out of the backfield. So you become one-dimensional as an offense. Nick Foles, he needs some help with him. He needs a strong tight end, wide receivers, and backs out of the backfield. So, yes, he is an upgrade as far as talent, but let's keep on shopping if you do land Nick Foles.
All right, finally, Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett, who many speculated would be let go this past season when the Cowboys were struggling, will in fact enter the final year of his deal in 2019. His contract has yet to be extended, that despite winning a second NFC title in 3 years. The head coach says he's never spent much time thinking about the business part of the job and that he is just focused right now on winning. See, what do you think the biggest challenge will be facing Jason Garrett moving forward this season?
Not listening to the noise outside, trying to get his staff together, because we can't forget last year they struggled as an offensive line. They changed their offensive line coach in the season, Mark Colombo, very, very young offensive line coach, former Cowboys player. They also have a new quarterback coach in John Kitna. They also have a new offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore. Continuity in the NFL, it means a lot. Coach Mangini's not here, but, man, I always listen to his words. They always ring true in my ear what you need as far as winning and moving forward. Because a lot of people forget about Dallas's slow start. They forget about the tremendous finish that they had in the last 10 games, 8-2. They forget that they did win a playoff game. So how do you build on that? Typically, you build on that with continuity. So if I was Jason Garrett, I would just be concerned about my staff coming up with what's going to be our game plan. How are we going? We got a great running game plan. How are we going to throw the ball? How are we going to get a number two receiver involved? How are we going to get the tight end involved? How do we make Ezekiel Elliott a better pass catcher out of the backfield? Those should be the things that Jason Garrett should be concerned about this offseason, because I believe Jerry Jones is going to give him an extension before they kick off the season.
And if he gets the extension before he kicks off the season, then to me, a lot of this pressure is totally relieved. But if he doesn't, when he's coming off one of his, I would argue, his third best season as a Cowboys coach, you could argue even his second best season as a Cowboys coach, and if he doesn't get an extension, then that is a signal to the entire football world that the Cowboys, while they like Jason Garrett, they're really interested in it. Wait, next year, is Drew Brees going to retire? And is Sean Payton going to be interested to come to the Dallas Cowboys? Like, and Jason Garrett's going to be coaching with that somewhere in his mind, or at least that noise surrounding him, particularly if they get off to a slow start. But to your point about the offensive staff, see, it's about, and anyone, no matter what your job is, can relate to this, it's about workflow. Like, how are the meetings going to be run? How is the game plan going to be put together? And on Sundays, who's really going to be calling the plays? That's the question. Like, Kitna's not going to be calling plays, obviously. He's the quarterback's coach. But with Kellen Moore there, with Jason Garrett there, with all those staff changes, one of the reasons you tend to stick with a head coach, one of the benefits of sticking with a head coach long term, is you don't have a ton of turnover on your staff unless you have enormous success like the Patriots and you have guys hired away. This is a different situation. You've had the same head coach for 10 years now, but you're having a ton of turnover on the staff, not because you had these great guys that were hired away from you, but because you thought you could get better. And then so much of this, obviously, is going to come down to the evolution of Dak Prescott, which almost every Cowboys offense conversation comes down to that.
When you change a lot of the coaches around the head coach, how important is it for players to have the continuity in the head coach? Or does it not matter as much if these guys are working specifically with the quarterback's coach or Kellen Moore or, you know, the new offensive coordinator?
It doesn't matter that much as far as the head coach, because in the offseason, the head coach is not engaged as much as you are with your position coach and the offensive coordinator. But we need to find out who is Kellen Moore. Yeah. Now, I know Jerry Jones and them, they like him, man. They thought he was a great football mind. He had to be a great football mind because he could not throw the ball. Undersized, so he must be a thinker as a quarterback because talent was not his strong suit. Who is John Kitna? I like John Kitna, but who? I like him as a football player. I like him as a teammate, but who is John Kitna as a coach? I don't know that, so I can't appropriate my faith in the human being to. I don't know what type of system they're going to run. I don't know the effect that he has on Dak Prescott. I have talked to Sanjay Lau, who is their wide receiver coach, and I know he's come up with a couple different ways that they can throw the football, be able to throw the ball down the field, to be able to add to this offense. He thinks that that part is missing from Dak. That part's missing from Amari Cooper, from both of them. He believes that Amari Cooper's an elite talent. But if I can add a consistent deep threat to threaten that defense through Amari Cooper. So he's trying to do some things as far as the passing game. Who are these other guys? If someone out there is on TV saying, oh, I know who Kellen Moore is. I know who John Kitna is.
No, no, look, John Kitna was coaching high schools. Like, and I'm not saying, listen, he played in the NFL, he had a nice career.
I coached 8 years of high school. I'm doing a TV show.
Right.
I'm not fit to be coaching the Dallas Cowboys right now.
And so, and that is, and even at the wide receiver position, and you were a better wide receiver than Kitna was quarterback. Like, the Kitna thing, I'm not saying it's not going to work. Not at all. But I totally agree with your point. If anyone is on television, radio, newspaper with a strong definitive opinion, here is what John Kitna is going to do for Dak Prescott, they're lying.
But nobody has any idea.
Well, this is my biggest concern with Kellen Moore and Kitna is it's the same thing when the next CEO of a company is the son of the previous CEO. When the people you hire are the people you're most familiar with, Kellen Moore once was a backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. John Kitna once was a backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. That doesn't mean it won't work. I just have concerns. Did you do a thorough enough search to get the best available person?
I do believe that Jason Garrett, that he has enough, he believes in their coaching ability to bring them on the staff. You don't get to 10 years coaching the Dallas Cowboys and you say, you know what, I'm just going to go out and grab me a high school coach. John Kitna, how he made his career as a not very, very talented, I'm talking about brilliant as far as decision making, great locker room guy, great leader. Yeah, I do believe he can be a good coach, but I can't just go on TV and say, yes, he is a good coach right now.
All right, let's move on to the New York Giants. They made a little news yesterday announcing that their quarterback situation will remain as is. According to head coach Pat Shurmur, Eli Manning will return for the 2019 season. The two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback has been the subject of criticism in New York. And GM Dave Gettleman has had enough of it.
The narrative around Eli for the past 4 years, 5 years since I was gone, was really negative. The narrative's been negative. And there's an old saying, you tell a lie long enough, you believe it. The narrative is so negative that when you take that position, most people struggle getting off that spot. The narrative has been negative, and I don't think it's been fair.
All right, here we go. Let's talk about it. First of all, are the Giants making the right choice sticking with Eli Manning? And then we'll get into whether the narrative is fair or not.
Well, I think what Dave Gettleman said there is really interesting. He's absolutely right. When people get stuck on a position, they have trouble moving off it. And the position the New York Giants franchise has been stuck on is Eli Manning has to be our quarterback. And they have had trouble getting off that position despite reams of evidence that you should have taken an exit ramp here, could have taken an exit ramp here, and they just keep barreling, going barren left. And so are they making a mistake? No, not if they draft a quarterback at six, not if they draft Dwayne Haskins, who I think really could use a redshirt season or at least a partial redshirt season. He played 14 games in his career at Ohio State, plus coming in the Michigan game is his redshirt freshman year. Like, he is a guy similar to Pat Mahomes, there's some rawness to him that he really benefited from his redshirt year, even though that is very rare in today's NFL. So if Eli's there as a mentor next year, I got no problem with it. It's an expensive mentor. It's $23 million. It'd only be $6 million if you traded him or cut him.
And as a mentor, he'd be playing and letting whoever they draft watch.
Certainly in the beginning of the year. But the idea that Eli Manning's 38 years old. In what world would anyone think Eli's going to be better older than Peyton was? Peyton, by 39, was finished, done, gone. Eli, no step of his football career has been better than Peyton. I know Peyton dealt with the major neck injury. Mm-hmm. I get that part of it. But the Giants 6 years ago, what Gettleman's talking about, the narrative started. Well, that year, Eli had the lowest quarterback rating in football and led the league in interceptions.
It was warranted.
And then the first couple years with Odell, the offense was good, but the team wasn't. Then that third year, the offense wasn't good, but they made the playoffs, so it covered it up. And then the last 2 years, they've been terrible. And a lot of that, it's not all on number 10, but a lot of it's on number 10. That's not a narrative. That's just what the games have shown us.
Well, Dave Gettleman, first of all, if you keep wearing that ugly sweater thing you're wearing there, that's a lie that people aren't going to ever believe. All right? So last year, I give you a pass. You said that Saquon Barkley had the type of talent that even your mom would say draft him. He's a Hall of Famer. Okay. He showed us. I'm cool with that. Now, that money you spent on your left tackle now, that was money bad spent on Nate Solder. He is not an elite offensive lineman. So you've made a couple of decisions, one very good and one I believe to be average. How are you going to protect Eli? Eli cannot get hit. Now, I believe that Eli is better than the average quarterback if you protect him. So I got a running back. I don't have an offensive line. I got a superstar receiver that I believe is ready to play. So it's up to you because you got the bag of money. How are you going to spend it? Are you going to protect Eli? Because I'm like Nick. It's not a bad decision if you do draft a quarterback. But if you allow that lie to tell yourself, you done told it long enough for 2 years, and you keep believing that Eli is the future of the New York football Giants, then you're getting ready to mess this up, Dave, like, because you have to get a quarterback. All right, I'm all for Eli Manning. I gave him enough credit, winning them two Super Bowls. Oh, man, putting back in their starter. Eli was over there crying and starting streak and everything. I'm the one to help get the dang on coach fired because I came out against the coach. That was bad. So you done fired him. Gettleman, it's time to move on from Eli. Draft a quarterback. Eli, it's time for him to be a mentor. Now, from a positive standpoint, I would say that Eli, out of all the Mannings, that includes Archie. Archie was a ridiculous athlete. Peyton, the only reason why Peyton didn't make it to 40 playing elite was because of the neck surgery. Eli's the best athlete in the family. I keep saying this over and over and over and again. People are like, wow, really? Eli, yes. You can be not mobile in the quarterback, as a quarterback in the pocket.
And be a good athlete.
And be Dan Marino.
Yeah.
Ridiculous athlete, ridiculous basketball player, ridiculous shortstop in baseball until he hurt his knees. So Eli's athleticism, he's the most athletic of the Mannings. That's the reason why he hadn't got hurt. You can't be a bad athlete
and play, never get hurt. I mean,
it's impossible.
This guy's never been hurt.
There can't possibly be a scenario whereby the Giants think this is their guy without having to draft another quarterback.
Well, the scenario is this. I'll tell you this much about Dave Gettleman. I would wager any amount of money you'd let me that he's not drafting Kyler Murray. That much, Dave Gettleman talks too much about how football's a game of big people played by big people for big people. He is as old school as it gets in a lot of his quotes and a lot of his actions. He's not drafting the 5'9 kid, okay? They shouldn't draft Daniel Jones or Drew Locke. That's insanity, right? So it's Dwayne Haskins, and they have the 6th pick. That's 5 opportunities for someone else to go get him. If you are saying these things about Eli Manning, are you prepared to do the things you need to do in the draft to move up to go get Dwayne Haskins? The Jets traded up from 6 to 3 last year. This year they're sitting at 3 again, and they're saying they'll trade back. I don't think Arizona is going to take a quarterback with the first overall pick.
So that's 2.
So you'd have to get through number 2. Like, are you willing to trade the 6th pick, the 37th pick, and next year's number 1 to make sure you go get Dwayne Haskins? I would be. I don't think they will be if they're still saying, man, it's a false narrative on Eli Manning. It's all just people have made up their mind, these fools who watch the games and create an opinion from watching the games rather than looking at Super Bowl rings and create an opinion. Like, so if I'm a Giants fan, I'm nervous because if you get Haskins, it's fine. Eli start as long as he wants because you have Haskins.
And if you don't?
If you draft Nate Solder's replacement at number 6 because Eli needs more protection, then we're going to be having the same conversation a year from now, just maybe with a different GM involved.
All right, let's take a break. Talk some more Lakers. Coming up, did LeBron send a message to all of his doubters last night ahead on First Things First? Back here first things first. Now joined by NBA champ Antoine Walker. Antoine, what good up, morning man. To you.
Also NCAA champ. Don't forget that.
Yeah, NCAA we were champ. A
couple ships.
NBA champ.
Put that in there a little bit.
I'm gonna get that in there. We ran out of time there, but I'm gonna allow more time for that tomorrow. That was my bad. All right, Antoine, let's talk about the night that Dwayne Wade had. Your former teammate on your former team in his former form, with the Heat down 2 to the Warriors. Wade nailing this miraculous buzzer-beating three-pointer to win the game, beat the Warriors. An incredible scene in Miami. The Golden State loss puts them at just a half game up on the Nuggets. But let's hear from D. Wade after the thrilling finish.
I was talking to my coaches, Chris Quinn, EG, and I told him, I said, I passed up some shots last game from three. And I said, if I pass up any today, find me. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, I was aggressive. And I took the shots that was given to me, and I did that. So I wonder when Kobe hit that game winner on me in L.A., when he hit it on the top. When he hit it on the glass for the top of the key, I said, how is that possible? Thank you for showing me the way. Mamba mentality.
Mamba mentality. How special, Antoine, was this night and the moment for Dwayne Wade?
Well, I got to be honest. I'm a little biased. I play with D. Wade, but also D. Wade is from Chicago. Mm-hmm. So we share some of the same backgrounds, a lot of the same friends. So I'm so happy for him this year, because as a player, you don't get this opportunity to go out on your own merit a lot. And he's having fun with it. You see it after every game. Other opponents are treating him really, really well. But I was excited. I think the moment you saw Eric Spoelstra talked about Dwayne finishing the season playing starter minutes and really trying to make the playoffs. So he's going to be a big part of what they got going on these last 20 games. So I'm excited for him. I know how hard he works to keep his body together. And coming to Chicago, it didn't work out. But to go back to Miami and have the success they have. And if they make the playoffs, it'll be great. It'll be great. But this moment right here, if you don't make it, at least you got something to look back at.
At least you got this moment right here. And it didn't, by the way, look like Dwayne Wade was going to have an opportunity to go out on his own terms. Like, last year
Let's not forget he got a gift from Cleveland.
Right. I mean,
he was awful with LeBron.
It doesn't work out in Chicago to where they pay him to leave. LeBron picks him up, and the Cavs pick him up, I should say. And they...
You said it right.
Yeah, you said it.
You don't like to say it. You don't like to say it, but you said it.
I thought LeBron picked him up in a deal.
I think LeBron allowed one player.
It's either this is what he was going to say.
Hold on.
Either LeBron picked him up, because he typically says that, or he lets it slip and say, we picked him up.
No, I don't say we. Hold on. That's not true, but the other one might be a little true. Doesn't matter. Point is, it doesn't work out in Cleveland, right? And they reconcile in Miami, because he and Pat Riley were a little angry at each other.
Absolutely.
He may be more angry at Pat than Pat at him, but he wasn't very good last year until the end. At the end, in the playoffs, he was good for them. And now he's averaging 14.5 points a game this year. He's been one of their most key players. He isn't starting really, but he is playing the end of games like this. We're not showing it here. But he hit the three on the possession before to put them in position after Durant had a sick four-point play that I thought was going to ice the game. And right now, yeah, they're in the 10 spot, but they're a half game out of the playoffs. Like, so this is great. And it's seeing him do the lap around the court, jump on the scorer's table. Yeah. I'm sure you guys both from your career have moments that stand out above some of the others. Like, just some moments particularly near the end of a wow, like that to hold on to. D. Wade will have this to hold on to forever, no matter what happens the rest of the way. I'm so happy.
Yeah, he's got a lot of great moments. And like Antoine, my relationship with Dwayne, it's a little bit different, because I was a season ticket holder for the Heat. And a friend of the Heat, Pat Riley, Randy Fun, traveled with them. I was on the court when Dwayne Wade won his first championship. So a lot of people like, oh, man, LeBron made him a champion. No, they didn't. That dude dominated the NBA Finals. It was unbelievable of how he grew his game and took over the court.
As a kid.
And being on the court, watching him, how he played the game, plays the game the right way. And since, he's had some struggles. He had to leave Miami. The owners of the team there, they never thought Dwayne Wade. They have lifers in Miami. Mm-hmm. Lonzo Mourning, man, Haslam, Dwayne Wade. Like, these are lifers. They will work for the team going into the future. So Tried to go back to his hometown, Chicago. It didn't work. Tried to go with his homeboy, LeBron, in Cleveland. It didn't work. He's also had some struggles off the court. Custody battles with his kids. He's got remarried. So I've seen his whole life come full circle. This is a great story. And that is the traditional Dwayne Wade. When I finish a game off, he jumps on the scoreboard. Yeah. Yes. And he and as they call it in Dade County,
Wade County.
It's Wade County. Man, it was refreshing to see an old man do what we had seen him do as a young man.
It's crazy to hear you talk about, because I was obviously a part of that team, and that finals was unbelievable. He wins game 3 for us and saves us. Mm-hmm. We go down 0-3, probably obviously lose that series, but he was terrific. I mean, he averaged 35-8 in that series, something like that. And people don't understand that. I think everybody looks at his championships with LeBron, but he was special. And obviously, when Shaq got there, gave him the name Flash, and he kind of took off from that. So I had to be a part of that. I was so happy to be a part of that, to see him become a star and become one of the best two guards ever. To me, he's in the top 5 all time, two guards.
Oh,
we can argue about
question.
That. So that's a lot of people sometimes forget about Dwayne Wade, because he did have a couple rough patches with Chicago and Cleveland, but he's unbelievable.
Jordan, Kobe, West, Wade are your 4 best two guards ever. And people can argue over the order, but those are the top 4, no question.
Allen Iverson, too.
Let's quickly just talk about what this means for the Golden State Warriors, now just a half a game up on Denver. How worried should this team be about holding on to that top spot in the West?
Depends who they play. It's not a lot of teams that can actually go into Golden State and win. I think Houston Rockets are one of those teams that can go in there and win. Not sure if the Denver Nuggets are experienced enough to go in there and win. But so it's not really that big of a problem for Golden State. I think they do have to think about last year a little bit, because Houston, if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, they may get out that series because of the home court advantage situation. So they may have to think about that. And if I'm Golden State, I want to be at home. I think they play the best basketball at home. They've shown that over the last 4 years to be a great home team. I don't know why they would not want to be that. I know that on the roster they can get it done probably from the 2 seed, but I believe there's only the Houston Rockets is the one team that can go in there and beat them in the Western Conference. So that's the only team I think they should be worried about.
Golden State has been scary at home the last 4 years, but not this year. When you look at the top teams in the NBA, if you look at their losses, right now Golden State, they got 10 losses at home. We had never, ever seen them lose that many games. And the top teams, most of them have won in Golden State. Houston right now, they haven't lost against Golden State. So I would be concerned not only in the West, but I would be concerned about that home court if you get to the finals.
Last night was their 10th road loss. 8 losses at home, which is the most they've had in this run. The point still stands. The home court matters at the end of the 6th week of the playoffs and at the end of the 8th week of the playoffs. By that, I mean the conference finals and the NBA finals. Golden State has never not had home court in the NBA finals. That's the other part of this. It's not just, are you going to keep home court over Denver? They have essentially, at this point in my mind, given up the opportunity to have home court if they were to play Milwaukee in the NBA Finals, and they are losing the ability to have home court if they play Toronto in the NBA Finals. That's a problem. And the other problem is, even if Denver doesn't scare them, what about the tougher road as the 2 seed? What about potentially having to play Oklahoma City or Houston in round 2 if you're the 2 seed? Like, it gets more difficult. They were down 24 midway through the second quarter.
Yeah.
They went all out to win that game. KD went crazy near the end, and they lost anyway. That's a tough loss for them.
We got to take a break. Antoine, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, is Kyler Murray emerging as the top pick in the NFL draft? That's next on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started right here with First Things First. You can catch it on Monday through Friday only on FS1. Time now for your Subway choice moment. Kyler Murray has been shooting up draft boards, possibly all the way to number 1. The Cardinals, who own that top pick, have been shooting down rumors that they're going after Kyler in the draft. Cardinals new head coach Cliff Kingsbury once praised the Heisman winner, and thus the rumors. However, the Arizona Cardinals drafted Josh Rosen last year, and their GM, Steve Keim, is sticking with him. He joined the herd yesterday. Take a listen.
I can't foresee that right now. Again, we know that this is a process we have to go through. And again, I think that what Josh showed us last year on and off the field makes me extremely comfortable that he's our quarterback moving forward.
All right, Cece, what do you think the Cardinals should do with the quarterback position next season?
I think they should go with Josh Rosen, but you got to be able to get him some help. You got to be able to protect him. The fastest way for a young quarterback not to be successful, you let him get hit NFL type during his rookie year, second year. You let him keep getting pressure in his face where he can't move, he can't make decisions, and that's what the Arizona Cardinals, that's what they served up to Josh Rosen in year number one. I don't even think it's fair. I believe that Josh Rosen is going to be a better pro than Kyler Murray. So if there was a no-brainer, if there was a Cam Newton in the draft, if there was a Peyton Manning in the draft, I would say, okay, I would look at it because I believe there's tremendous value with Josh Rosen being able to ship him somewhere right. else. But no, I believe Josh Rosen is going to be a better pro, and that's what this is about, not who was a better college player. Because if we think that Kyler Murray would have been good in that system last year under the duress that Josh went under, that's not true. So this is I believe Steve Keim, that they're doing the right thing moving forward. They're going to draft the best player, and I believe that that's Nicky Bosa out of Ohio State.
So that last part is the only part I disagree with you about. Not that Nicky Bosa is not the best player, but I think the best thing they could do for Rosen, the best thing they could do for the franchise, if you are not going to take a quarterback with the number one overall pick, and there's not one but two quarterbacks teams seem to be very high on, and Kyler and, of course, Dwayne Haskins, the way to get the most value out of that pick is to shop that pick yourself. It is almost, when you have as many needs as the Cardinals have, and to your point, you need to keep him upright. You certainly need another receiver. Larry Fitzgerald cannot keep playing forever. I like their running back, David Johnson, even though he wasn't that good. He wasn't as good last year and the year before he was hurt. In their defense, you like Patrick Peterson, you like Chandler Jones, and you've got some question marks everywhere else. I would try to see if a team like the Giants is interested in trading up from six and giving me extra picks. If a team that maybe is further down in the draft but really loves Kyler or Haskins wants to move all the way up, because I think the Cardinals have so many needs, just one superstar pass rusher is not enough value out of that number one overall pick.
This is the biggest problem. Who selected number two?
San Francisco.
Did I go to the Rose Bowl this year Ohio State was playing in?
I believe you did.
Did Nicky Bosa not make a guest appearance to only not only watch Ohio State practice but showed up at the game? Mm-hmm. There was also a general manager. His name's John Lynch. I know John really well. We played a lot of football against each other. John Lynch will not let Nicky Bosa go past number two. So if you're Arizona and you want Nicky Bosa, You can't move out of that spot.
Oh, I agree totally. You would be passing up on the opportunity to get Nicky Bosa. I don't think you could trade back and still get him. I'm not saying you could get the player at six that you would get at one. I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that I think they need an offensive lineman. I think they need almost everything. And I like Rosen. So I would keep my quarterback, and I wouldn't hate the idea of drafting Nicky Bosa at one. I think he's going to be a 12-sack-a-year guy by year two. But I think they have so many needs. It's similar to how I felt about the Giants last year. I love Saquon. I love him as a player. But if you weren't going to take a quarterback at number two, I think the more value would have been doing something similar to what the other New York team did. The Jets move back a few spots in the draft and get three extra premium picks. That's what, if I'm Steve Keim, I'm most interested in. Certainly far more interested than taking Kyler at one and then shopping Josh Rosen.
But you're comfortable with keeping Josh Rosen in that Cardinal system, get him a little bit help and see what he can do in year two.
I was very high on him coming out of college. We all know this. I didn't care about any of the off-the-field stuff, and I loved the way he threw the football. He had a terrible rookie season. Nobody can deny that. Mm-hmm. I also wonder, aside from, like, let's just say Darnold was there. Would Darnold, Baker might have looked better. Would Darnold have looked much better than Rosen did? I don't think so. I think most of the quarterbacks taken in this draft would have struggled the way Rosen did. There's nothing I can pull on from his rookie season and say he's going to be a star. But given the circumstances, I couldn't give up on him 1 year in. I don't think that would be fair. They gave up on the coach 1 year in. Right. Can't give up on the quarterback 1 year in as well.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, were people counting out LeBron too soon? That's next on First Things First. Check out Michigan State taking on Indiana. Then Villanova going up against Butler. It all tips off Saturday, 11:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Let's go, Coach Izzo. Let's get it done. I know you and your wife watch the show. Let's go, bro.
All right, we'll get to LeBron in a second, but first, Georgetown DeBall and Matt McClung, the Hoyas guard, getting a steal, finishing
We haven't seen quite as many collegiate highlights from one Mac McClung as we saw high school highlights from him. He still get up there. Job, young fella.
You recognize him because he's got a shirt on. In high school, he very rarely had a shirt on with the
in the high school practices, correct.
Next
in the games,
up,
they did have him wear it.
Sometimes. Vince Carter showing off major hang time with the layup.
Oh, New York City, that's the Statue of Liberty.
That's amazing.
Give it up.
That's amazing.
He's like 55 years old, Jenna.
You and him? For real.
Oh, Jenna turned 50 yesterday.
Easy. No. 40. Thank you for playing.
Five.
Okay, so we were all wrong. Clippers, Jazz, Donovan Mitchell. Oh, Donovan Mitchell. Shaking Landry Shamet out of the play.
Important win for Utah last night.
Oh, absolutely.
It looked like they might blow it at the end after an enormous comeback. They're down 17, I think, in the first quarter. Came all the way back. Clippers trying to hold on to that playoff spot. Oh.
Back to the Lakers. And a huge game for LeBron, the one-legged corner dagger, 3 of LeBron's team-high 33. But, boy, this was a beauty. L.A. beaten up on the Pelicans 125-119. Lakers now still 3 games back of the 8th seed in the West. Nick, did LeBron look like he did before the injury? Was this vintage LeBron, you know, before he got hurt and missed those games?
This was the closest he's looked like himself since the injury. He looked like he had the most stamina. Now, it probably is not a coincidence. It's also the fewest minutes he's played since the Philadelphia game. He had played 39 to 42 minutes every game since the Philly game. Last night, it was a much more reasonable 37 minutes. So, at the where we're most focused is at the very end of games. Obviously, those would be the 39th minutes, 40th minutes, right, when a guy would be most tired. He had the most explosion-y we've seen since pre-injury. He had a couple monster dunks, one right there that we're showing you, and one during a stretch where Kuzma was dunking on everybody, and then LeBron split up with one of his own. I do not think he is back to the playing weight he wants to be at, and I know he is not at the stamina and endurance he is accustomed to being at, but he's getting closer. And it just reminded us, for people that were a little panicked, that LeBron James is still, when he is playing like LeBron James, the most dominant player we have in the league. Like, what last night, he was excellent on both ends of the court. Last night, he was hitting his shot, which is something he hadn't been doing since the injury. That was the other thing that happened. His three-point shot had gone awry a bit since he returned. So, yeah, he looked like LeBron James again last night.
Last night, he did look good. It's the best that we've seen him since Christmas when he was injured. So, Christmas Day, we thought he was the best player in the world. I'm not going to get him back to that because for the last week, we talked about LeBron not being the best player in the world, looking overweight, looking like he was laboring. It's easy on the offensive side of the court to have energy. But when you talk about players coming back from injuries, what type of cardio, where are they? I like to look on the defensive end. And last night was the most active that he was on the defensive end. So for me, that's the best message to send to his teammates. Because, yes, we need LeBron. If we're Lakers, we need him to be an elite scorer for this offense. But also on the defensive side, you can't continue to try to be a leader and tell guys, I want you to do this, this, and this, but I'm not doing anything on the defensive side. So from a defensive standpoint, more energy, more engaged, definitely switching, trying to get each other's back. You could see that from the Lakers. From an offensive standpoint, Rondo was relieving him of some of the distributing of the basketball on the offensive end, taking over some of the ball handling. To me, that allows him some time to be able to rest on the offensive ends, because you can't rest on the defensive end with those other four defenders they put on the court, because they do not, especially with Lonzo being out of the lineup, they do not have one great individual defender.
And with the lineup they went with last night, bless you, they don't have a rim protector.
No.
So you don't have a great individual perimeter defender with Lonzo out. And when your biggest guy starting is Kuzma, like last night they had their front court was LeBron, Ingram, and Kuzma with Rondo and Bullock in their backcourt. Like, you are going to get beat up. Julius Randle ate this team alive last night. The former Laker came back to Los Angeles and showed them what they were missing. A lot of that was because Tyson Chandler played 2 minutes and JaVale McGee played minimally, and they've traded away Zubats, who was their best center.
All right, in the most dramatic form, passionable, we had LeBron basically left for dead yesterday because most people thought that we were seeing the beginning of what that injury had done to him. Do you still think, Nick, that LeBron is the best player in the world?
Yes. Listen, he has not played, he has not been the best player this season. Like, he is not going to be the MVP. I don't think he's going to finish top 5 in the MVP for the first time in 13 years. He's not going to be first-team All-NBA for the first time in 11 years. So he has not played to the level of the best player in the world. That is fair. But is he the – would you rather have – is there anyone in the world, if you could take him – put him on your team for the playoffs, you would rather have than LeBron? The answer is no. And if we thought –
wait, is that your answer as well?
He's speaking for himself.
Okay.
He's not speaking for me.
All right, go ahead.
LeBron last regular season played all 82 games. He's the best player in the world. Obviously, we saw him through the playoffs. LeBron was the best player in the world. He has not been the best player in the world this year. There have been at least four players better than him, that being Giannis, that being Harden, that being Steph, and that being KD. So right now, yeah, Nick can say that. He wasn't saying that last week. So, yeah, you can say that today. To me, all four of those players have played better this season than LeBron. We're going to see in the postseason who plays the best. So, for me, the greatest player in the world, that crown, it is up for grabs. And we're going to – and we're in this playoff run, we're going to make that determination. We're not going to make it today, February 28th, because LeBron is just coming off an injury. He missed 18 games. You talk about he might be 20 pounds overweight. If he is 20 pounds overweight, we know he's not the best player. So we need to wait till we get to the playoffs. He should have his stamina by then, and that we should judge. If LeBron's not in the playoffs, it's impossible for him to be the best player in the world.
The last year and the year before that, it wouldn't have been a four-person list, but there were – you can check the MVP standings. There was – the general opinion was during the regular season, LeBron wasn't the best player. And then in the playoffs, every year he's reminded everyone who's the best player is by a wide margin. He did that most recently 9 months ago when it was as big of a margin as we've ever seen him versus anyone else. He might not have the opportunity. And to Chris's point, it's hard to hold on to that title, that figurative title, if your team's not even in the postseason. So I understand that side of the argument. But if you're asking me who would I rather have than any other player in the world, Giannis, I think, should be the MVP, and Harden's close. I'd rather have LeBron than both of them. I would certainly rather have LeBron in the postseason than Steph or Durant. I understand we might not get to see it this year, and then it'll be fair for someone to say it's transition.
We do the same thing in the NFL. Oh, what player would you rather have? I'd rather have Aaron Rodgers. Well, if he don't get his team to the playoffs, I'd rather have Patty Mahomes. I'd rather have Tom Brady, because those players are the best players in the league. When you don't get your players to the postseason, especially in the NBA, where you have a more impact on the game, man, you can miss me with that one. LeBron, that title, he can hand that over to someone as he's watching the playoffs, that the Lakers don't make the playoffs. Oh, yeah, it's good night.
I would just argue, Michael Jordan, the day he came back from baseball retirement, he hadn't played in a year and a half, he was the best player in the world. Like, he hadn't even played basketball. Forget make the playoffs. Hadn't even played basketball in a year and a half. He was the best player in the world. When you've been to 8 straight finals, when you now are getting back to health, I will give LeBron that level of dispensation that we gave Jordan 20 years ago.
Miss me with that. I missed that. I'm going to bring that back.
Hey, coming
up,
real, man.
Does Jason Garrett deserve an extension before the season starts? Miss me with it. Next on First Things First. First things first, we are going viral. Last night, NFL MVP Patty Mahomes was at the Staples Center watching who else but LeBron. After the game, Mahomes tweeted,
Patty blocking people's view.
Big time shot by a big time player at King James. LeBron replied to Mahomes and said, good to have you in the building tonight, MVP. Nick, you must have been out of your mind.
Listen, it's the greatest to ever do it, and LeBron. That's an amazing little tweet back and forth. One Patrick Mahomes, LeBron James. See, let me ask you a question, though. Don't shake your head. Hold on. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
When you have those expensive seats right there,
yeah,
you standing up like that last possession of the game right in front of you?
He's not used to being in those seats.
Okay,
didn't know.
All right, but I'm asking Chris Carter what he thinks the etiquette is, because he is used to
being. The etiquette is based on the moment. If it's a big moment, you can stand up. And, like, I ain't concerned about nobody saying nothing to me. What are they going to say? Hey, sit down. Hey, shut your face. How about that?
That's what I was hoping for. That's the reaction I was hoping for. Hey, if you don't want someone blocking you, buy the seats where no one can block you but the players, I guess.
Man, blame it on the team, man. The team gave me these seats.
Jason Garrett entering the final year of his deal with the Cowboys, but the head coach says he's never spent much time thinking about the business part of the job and that he's just focused on doing his job and winning. See, what's the biggest challenge facing Jason Garrett right now?
It's to make sure that coaching staff has some type of continuity, because they've made three significant changes. They changed Mark Colombo, the offensive line coach, during the regular season. Now they have John Kitna and Kellen Moore running as offensive coordinator and unproven as a quarterback coach. This is the most important year of Jason Garrett, his influence on Dak Prescott and that offense. That's what I'd be concentrating on this offseason.
And I know you believe he's going to end up getting an extension, not be a lame duck head coach going into what would be his 10th year with the team. It'll be very interesting if they don't give him the extension, the noise surrounding potentially Sean Payton being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys in 2020, particularly if it looks like 2019 might be Drew Brees' last year in New Orleans.
And Eagles will not be putting the franchise tag on Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles. GM Howie Roseman says Foles deserves the chance to lead a team. So with Foles set to become a free agent, the Jaguars are reportedly favorites to land him. Nick, what do you think of this fit?
I think for the Jaguars, he would be an upgrade, but you would be then spending, you know, probably overpay for Nick Foles, and they way overpaid to keep Blake Bortles inexplicably. So it's going to be harder to improve the other aspects of the team that they need to improve. For Foles, I would hope there is a better option than Jacksonville. I don't know how long that coach and that team president are going to be there. They need a bunch of wide receivers. I think they need another running back. There are real issues in Jacksonville on the offensive side of the ball.
Nick Foles, they're right. He deserves the right to start. Jacksonville, it is an improvement. They have to put a lot of pieces around Nick Foles if he's going to have some success, because I believe Nick Foles is just a marginal starter, and we will see the old Nick Foles emerge when he becomes that starter.
To the NBA now, with Heat down 2 to the Warriors. D-Wade hitting the miraculous buzzer-beating three-pointer to win the game. An incredible scene in Miami. For Golden State, the loss puts them at just a half a game up on the Denver Nuggets. But, CeCe, how special was this moment for Dwayne Wade?
It was special. It was a special moment. I like the fact that the Heat, they went for the win, even playing at home. You've watched the final set. They got four guys behind the three-point line. We are not fooling around with Golden State trying to play them into overtime. After Golden State had stormed back, the Heat had over a 20-point lead in the first half of that game. But to see a moment like this, the greats that have played the game, we have these memories of them, and anytime they can take us back in the time machine, it's always very, very special. Now, the NBA has done a great job with Dwayne Wade and Dirk as they travel around the league. This is not the type of play that we're going to see Dirk be able to make, because his skill level with that right now, he's just not going to be able to do that. Dwayne Wade, this is some of the best basketball he's played in the last couple years. He had a tough transition, leaving Miami, never wanted to leave, had a dispute there with Pat Riley, went to Chicago, his hometown, trying to bring back some of the magic. What didn't happen there? Oh, my homeboy is over in Cleveland, LeBron, let me go there. They gave me a courtesy release so I can come back to Miami. This is the way to be able to finish your career. A guy who's been a great NBA player on and off the court, and he's had some struggles too in his own personal life. To see him to have a moment like this back in Miami beating the world champs, I thought was really special.
And nobody could have thought he was going to have any type of final year tour with this team playing at this level just a year ago around this time. It was a year and a week ago that he was traded back to Miami for a second-round pick that'll never convey, because Cleveland was like, as bad as that roster was, remember, Cleveland said, we can't even use you. Like, they thought, everyone thought D-Wade was done, and then he played well at the end of the season last year for Miami, and C's right, he's playing his best basketball in a few, he's playing nearly 15 points per game, playing in crunch time minutes. And the way the Heat won this game, the Warriors don't lose these types of games. The game where, like, the Heat are up 24 early, the Warriors, if they storm all the way back and take the lead, they win those games. The Warriors had multiple 4-point plays as part of the fourth quarter comeback. They were up 4 with 18 seconds left. D-Wade comes down and hits a 3. Kevin Durant goes 1 of 2 from the line, and then you get that play. This is an excellent win for Miami, which is now just a half game out of the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, and a potentially damaging loss for Golden State.
What do you think? See, they're just a half game up on the Nuggets now, Golden State. Are we concerned about positioning at the top of the West for them?
You have to be concerned. They haven't played great basketball at home. They haven't played great basketball against the best teams in the NBA. If you look at their overall win-loss record against the best teams, it's not a favorable one. And also, since Boogie Cousins has come back, are they really, even though they're more talented, are they playing better basketball? It's been proven, the numbers. They're not a better offensive team. And we know, with Boogie on the court, they're not going to be as good a defensive team. So Golden State, Nick points it out because they could have mailed this one in. They're in Miami. Mm-hmm. They probably hung out a little bit the night before the game.
They
That's what the first half looked like.
They had
and
the
then
day
Clay,
off in Miami the
Clay
day
changed
before.
The medication at halftime, got it right, started draining, and then KD
was
got,
unbelievable.
At the end, oh man, he was sensational. So big loss by Golden State and Miami.
Listen, they've only been challenged in one playoff series since they got Kevin Durant. It was the only playoff series they did not have home court advantage. I don't think that's a total coincidence. And even if I don't think Denver can really challenge them, it's not just dropping from the 1 to 2 line in the West. It's the fact that they are staring at if and when, and more likely when than if, they make the NBA Finals. Being on the road in game one right. in Milwaukee or on the road in game one in Toronto. One of Golden State, the only real weakness Golden State has, except for at the moment probably a bit of a lack of depth, particularly when Boogie doesn't play, is they can be down 24 early and be fine and know or feel like they're fine
they're
because Clay
it.
And Steph and KD can go off the way they did. But because of how they played in the first half, the spectacular end of the second quarter and basically entirety of the second half mm-hmm. wasn't enough.
Right.
And now they're in a spot where if they do care about the one seed C, they're not going to get the rest they thought they were going to get at the end of the season. They're not going to be able to go in. You can have a guy turn an ankle in game 81 that he otherwise would be sitting in. All those things are on the board if they care about the one seed.
All right, it's been about 8 minutes since Nick thought about a list. So it is time for Nick Makes a List. Hawks rookie sensation Trae Young had his second consecutive 36-point game last night. Young has gone for 30 in 3 of his last 4 games. So, Nick, it got us thinking, you should rank the best rookies in the league. So, do it off the top of your head.
All right, so
we'll make a graphic.
Best
just
rookies in
it.
The league. We'll only go 6 deep this time. We'll start with a guy at number 6 who's playing on right now a playoff team. His numbers aren't as good as the other guys, but he's playing big minutes on a good team. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Kentucky kid, who for the Los Angeles Clippers has been excellent for them, around 10 points a game playing point guard. Number 5 is a guy who's dealing with an injury, but he had been one of the few bright spots for the Memphis Grizzlies this year. Jaren Jackson Jr., top 5 pick. He had been very good. They're going to be very cautious with him with an injury. And unfortunately, number 4 is a guy you were just talking about yesterday, how impressed you had been with him, Marvin Bagley III, another guy playing on a fringe playoff team. He's given you 14-8 a night. Now, last night it looked like, he might have suffered a significant injury, but prior to that, I know you loved what Bagley had been doing.
Yeah, and also De'Aaron Fox, that combination, I believe, is a bright one moving forward. Got a guy to push the ball. Bagley, I believe, is going to be an effective 3-point shooter from that left side. Man, very good offensive player. Underrated, I believe, amongst these young players.
Absolutely, and to add to them, Buddy Hield as well is just a dead-eye shooter. Each of these guys in the top 3 most years would run away with Rookie of the Year. Number 3, DeAndre Ayton. Number 1 pick of the draft as a rookie. He's giving you a double-double every night. 16.5 and 10.5. I know the team stinks, but 16 and 10 every night, that's Rookie of the Year most years. He's been doing it in obscurity in Phoenix, but he's been all the part of a number 1 pick in a typical draft.
Yeah, if they can get a free agent, a quality veteran player to join this young mix, they could do some exciting things, Phoenix, there in the desert.
And then a guy I loved coming out of school. I know a lot of people had questions about his shot selection and size. People underrated his playmaking ability. That's Trae Young. Trae Young giving you 18-8 a night as a rookie for the Atlanta Hawks. Last night became just the 3rd rookie ever to have back-to-back 35.5 assist games, joining Michael Jordan and Allen Iverson. He's actually not shooting the 3 that well this year, just 33%, still giving you 18-8. I know you've been impressed with how immediately he's adjusted to the NBA game.
He has adjusted. Undersized players, we always have questions about them. Is he going to be the next Steph? He has taken the right steps. If Luka is not having the sensational rookie season or wasn't one of those type of once-in-a-generation type player, Trae would be the guy.
Absolutely. Trae would win Rookie of the Year 9 out of every 10 seasons, but we're in one of those 1 out of 10 seasons. You mentioned it, Luka Doncic. This is everybody's Rookie of the Year. 21-8-6 a night for a team that's been right around 500 most of the year. He is having the best rookie season anyone has had since LeBron, and you could argue a better rookie season than LeBron did. He turns 20 today. He was doing all of this as a teenager. He has been the entirety of the part of what was the greatest teenage European player we had ever seen.
He's very, very fortunate from playing in the very, very physical European League, coming to the NBA at the time where they had the freedom of movement, great transition. He mentioned it's easier to score in the NBA than it was in Europe. Man, look for bright things for him from a long time.
And when you say he's fortunate, I thought you were going to say because of the team he went to.
Oh,
he's
yeah,
there
absolutely.
With Dirk. Now they also have Chris
Rick Stapps. Carlisle is an underrated coach. Yes.
It's a perfect situation, perfect incubator for him to win Rookie of the Year and do a lot more.
All right, Nick, good stuff. Coming up, are the Celtics better without Kyrie? That's next on First Things First. Here with Antoine Walker. We are talking about his former squad, the Celtics. They were looking to snap their three-game losing streak, and that mission was not accomplished, Antoine. They played well, but not well enough to beat the Portland Trailblazers. Damian Lillard putting up 33. Portland beating up on Boston 97-92. Celtics have now lost four in a row. They've now lost six of their last eight, and they have now lost ground in the East, falling deeper down into that fifth spot. But Kyrie, still a little optimistic. Take a listen.
1-2 is pretty much locked up, 1-2-3. So, just play to, as long as we get there. I can't wait for this. All this other BS about regular season and keep getting better and talking over and over and over and again about what we can do to keep getting better in the regular season. I just want to be at the highest level playing. I mean, that's what I'm here for.
What's your confidence level in the team going forward?
What do you mean?
Just in terms of, you got a
question. Is that?
A legitimate question. I mean, how do you feel about this team?
Okay, next question.
All right, Antoine, put this in perspective a little bit. How much trouble are the Celtics actually in? They played a little bit better, but they're still losing games.
They're in a lot of trouble because now they're probably not going to be able to get in the top three spots. With the way they're playing basketball, they're going to probably be in the 4 or 5 spot, which makes for a tough matchup, regardless if it's Philly or if it's Indiana, it makes for a tough matchup. So you're looking at possibly getting eliminated in the first round, which will be a disaster. And now you're really going, now you're talking about probably a whole different team next year for the Celtics if that ends up happening. I think last night, if you watched that game last night, you could see where the problem lies at. One on the defensive end, in the pick and roll, they were not communicating. There was constantly arguments and fights when they were playing against Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, two guys are going to put a lot of pressure on you. They just, the communication part, that comes from lack of leadership, guys not getting along. You can see that. Then offensively, I hate to point the finger at him, but Gordon Haywood plays 27 minutes, gives you 3 points. I mean, he's got to be better than that. That's one guy that they're going to need to step up, and he's not delivering.
I don't blame Gordon Hayward. I blame the coach for playing him 27 minutes. The time is up on Gordon Hayward being your sixth man, being a prominent part of your rotation. When one of the other problems with the Celtics in my eyes is Jaylen Brown wants more minutes. Jason Tatum wants more opportunities. I know people say Jason Tatum's playing the same amount of minutes this year as last year. Well, yeah, but he wants to be playing more minutes than he did last year. He's in year two. He's not a rookie anymore. Gordon Hayward, he has not recovered physically and mentally from his injury. They've got to win games. This is, to me, one of the rare spots where, even though he's a max contract guy, you don't have to give him DNP coach's decision. But he can be down in the 12 to 14 minute a night range. I think it would make the team better.
I had a problem because I've coached a lot of kids. And you get attached to kids when you come into their lives early. So for me, what I'm going to watch for, and I can understand what you're saying as far as Gordon Hayward. It's tough for him because he's healthy and to say, coach, take me out of the lineup. He's got a bunch of pride, and he realized, just like Paul George, the more minutes I stay out there, eventually I'm going to get my confidence back if he's going to win. But his confidence is not going to come back by not playing in NBA games. But the biggest problem is the relationship between Brad Stevens, him recruiting Gordon Hayward, and knowing him as a kid. I had this. I coached Giovanni Bernard, great running back, Cincinnati Bengals. Coached him as a kid, Little League. He ended up going to the same high school that I was going to be coaching at. Obvious. That's the way things go. Yeah. The kids travel with the coaches. Gio got hurt in his senior year. We kept trying to rush him back. We were trying to fight for a national championship. I had another running back. He wasn't too bad. Name's James White. Gio was a better runner. James is a better all-round player coming out of the backfield. We tried to force Gio back. We need Gio back. We should have been going with James White. And when you have relationships with kids, it's hard to give up on them. I know the optics don't say it. I know the stat sheet says he didn't. But when I've been involved with a person, that was part of Gordon coming there.
Right.
So now I'm at the worst part of my career. Y'all getting ready to give up on me? Now, it might be the right thing, but this one time, what we miss a lot in sports is, man, they're human.
The human element.
And that human element is the reason why Gordon is going out there struggling, trying to play, trying to recapture. He's got a lot of pride. But what gets in the way, when you have those existing relationships, that, man, can I really judge him as a basketball player right now? Is it better for him to sit and then potentially come back the start of next season? Those are tough questions.
Yeah, I got the same type of story. I played for Rick Pitino, obviously, in college. After my first year in the league, he comes and coaches the Boston Celtics. Coaches for 2.5 years. He paid me my big contract. I make the All-Star team the second year with him in 98. And then things went downhill because he wanted to win right away. The roster was a changeover, kind of pointing the finger. I was the man. We drafted Paul in 99. Mm-hmm. But I had to get away from Coach P. And obviously he left, or I was going to have to leave because we were not getting along. Our relationship had been tarnished. Because he wanted to win. And a lot of the pressure was on me. I'm 20, 21 years old. And he forced a hand where he could not take it. And he ended up leaving, mm-hmm. and I ended up staying. But it was one of those situations where he had me. He was a father figure mm-hmm. for me in college. He wanted the best for me. He paid me my contract.
Right.
He took care of me as a player. But then it did not work on the court. It did not work when he was the head coach of the Celtics.
And one of those problems become, man, he coached you when you were a kid. Man, I got my own money. I'm grown now. Like, you can't talk to me that way anymore. So it becomes, man, at Gordon, does the coach actually know what is best for him right now? Because this is the least athletic he's been his whole career.
And the least confident he's ever been on a basketball court. He was more confident on a basketball court, I guarantee, when he was 10 years old. The best player out there busting heads.
Man, didn't he almost hit a three to win a national championship?
Half quarter almost.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Can't they just reduce his minutes? Well, do they have to take him out
completely?
No,
that's what I think. That's what I think they need to do. But I also want to spread this around a little bit. I've been hearing for all season long, the reason Anthony Davis didn't get traded is because, well, if you can get Jason Tatum, you have to wait to get Jason Tatum. I've been hearing that he's going to win a scoring title in this league, that he's going to be an All-NBA forward in this league. Jason Tatum need to play better than Kyrie is doing his part. I know they haven't won with Kyrie as much as they won without him. It makes no sense. I get it. Mm-hmm. But Jason Tatum is having a fine season. He's gone from last year 14 points a game to this year 16 points a game, slightly less efficient.
Right.
He's not a playmaker. He's never averaged 2 assists per game in his two-year career. He's at 1.3 to 1.8. Jason Tatum, in his 31 minutes a night, needs to be more efficient or needs to get more minutes and more opportunities. Because if the Celtics aren't going to have anything close to all-star production from Gordon Hayward, and we know what Al Horford's going to give you, and Horford continues to be underrated, mm-hmm. they need Tatum close to 20 a night. He's got a lot of these nights, 6 of 11, 14 points. That's what he was last night. Mm-hmm. He's had a lot of those this year. Jaylen Brown, I don't think it's fair to ask him to be a high-level scorer. We think we know Tatum can do it. He needs to play better as well.
Well, you got to think about this, too. You got to put a little more blame on Kyrie. He takes 24 shots last night. You got to maybe defer a little bit to get these guys involved. Kyrie's not a guy that's going to get you 10, 12 assists a game. You know, that's not his makeup. That's not how he plays. Jason Tatum's a guy that needs ISO situations, needs the ball, where he can get his opportunities to go one-on-one. Last year, he got that once Kyrie was gone. You could feature him in the game. That's why he was able to get big numbers. That's why people mm-hmm. started talking about scoring titles and the way he could score the basketball, because he was getting the ball. He was kind of like a Carmelo type of player. Mm. Kind of like a ball, get it to him. He can make his own move, make his own play. Jaylen Brown's another guy who can create for himself. So guys that play with scoring point guards usually struggle in those type of situations. Mm.
All right, Antoine, stick around. Got to take a quick break. Coming up, does LeBron have enough left in the tank to make the playoffs? That's next on First Things First. Saturday, Michigan State takes on Indiana, then Villanova clashes with Butler. It all tips off at 11:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports
Friends of the show. Let's go, Coach Izzo.
And
let's
Coach
go,
Jay.
Nova.
And Jay Wright, yep. Back here with Antoine Walker. The Lakers hosted the Pelicans last night. Over 2 minutes to go. L.A. by 3. LeBron with the basket plus the foul. Lakers go up 6. Under a minute now. Lakers up 3 again. LeBron forcing the Jrue Holiday turnover. A little defense out of LeBron. On the other end, watch it. LeBron making highlights from the corner, off one leg, hits the dagger, 33 points, 10 assists for the King. Lakers win 125, 119. Antoine, what'd you make of LeBron and the Lakers last night?
I liked them. I thought they was better. I thought the starting of Rajon Rondo was huge, 16 assists. I talked about that yesterday, about they need to put him in the starting lineup. It helps LeBron, especially early in games, when he's able to facilitate and get other guys shots. Mm-hmm. I thought Ingram and Kuz were good. They've been good since All-Star break as far as being consistent. One thing about LeBron that I liked, he made a few threes last night.
Yeah.
When he gets back to doing that, the game comes a lot easier to him. Second half, he makes four threes. Obviously, he makes the big three at the end of the game. But the game became a little easier to him last mm-hmm. night. Obviously, the free throw shooting's got to, you know, eventually get better if he's going to get the ball in his hand. But I said, I believe that they can make the playoffs because of LeBron James, because he can win these type of games. It's going to be difficult. They're going to need a little help. They got help last night, took advantage of that with the Clippers losing. And also
the Kings lost.
The Kings lost, too.
The Spurs won.
Right,
the Kings
so they took advantage of the opportunity last night. But I thought it was a better effort, but they also got to look in the mirror. Don't get too excited, because Anthony Davis did not play in that fourth quarter. He was having one of those monster games.
So this is my concern with the new starting lineup. Because, listen, obviously LeBron was excellent and closed it out at the end, and I think we're going to see more of that from LeBron over the final 20 games. I like Rondo starting, and I think Rondo clearly likes starting, because Rondo got taken out of the starting lineup after he hit that game winner against Boston. Not coincidentally to me, went through the worst stretch he's had of the season. And then last night, while he couldn't hit a shot to save his life for the first three quarters, he was excellent facilitating the offense. But if Rondo's going to start, they want Reggie Bullock on the court with LeBron as much as possible, because he's the one dead-eye shooter they got. That's why they traded for him. You are going to be incredibly small. And that's one of the reasons Anthony Davis killed you and Julius Randle killed you. Unless you take either Kuzma or Ingram, I would prefer it be Ingram, and say, you're good enough to be a starter. We know that you're playing your best basketball. We need you to run our sixth man unit. We need you to run our offense when LeBron's off the court. And that way you can get, you're not going to lose range shooting, because Ingram's not a range shooter. That way you can get a real center out there. CeCe is concerned, understandably, about what that would do to the confidence of a young player or the mentality of a young player. What do you think about their lack of height with the starting lineup they had last night?
I like if they start a big JaVale McGee, because he's athletic. He gives LeBron's not necessarily guarding at a very high level now
right.
as he's getting
right.
old in his career, so he protects LeBron. But it's too hard. I'm with Chris on this. It's going to be too hard to tell Kuzma or Ingram they got to come off the bench.
Right.
I mean, they just went through a tough stretch for 10 days that they thought they were not going to be Lakers anymore. And then you go to them and say you want them to come off the bench. I don't think that can happen at this point in the season.
If they're going to insert a center, it would have to be at the expense of either Rondo or Bullock.
I think Bullock should come off the bench. Don't get me wrong. I like Bullock. They do need shooting. LeBron's always playing
with
shooters.
I like Bullock, but Bullock ain't Clay. I mean, this guy ain't going to win the three-point shot contest.
That's true.
Now, is he the best knockdown shooter when they would
for the Lakers?
Give it their limited options? Yes. But who they have starting at the beginning of the season? They didn't have no knockdown shooter with LeBron playing, did they?
No.
They had Lonzo, a better defender. They had JaVale, which helped protect LeBron because he can. The way he guarded at the end. Giving the guy one way, trying to force him to the hole. Don't give him a two-way go. So the fact that there's no trust between the younger players and the coaching staff. That's the reason why. If you trust the coach, you're like, okay, I don't mind going to be the sixth man because I can trust you. What you're going to say is going to be true. And in the fourth quarter, I'm going to be playing. But, man, when you got my name involved in every trade rumor, when you're worrying about your job, it's hard for a younger player who they don't have a whole bunch of trust to I'm just going to give that to the coach. And right now, both of those players, Kuz, you can't go to him and be like, hey, Kuz, we think you'll be better off the bench. He'd be like, why? I'm playing.
He's been their second best player.
Okay, and Ingram, what's wrong with me the last couple weeks? I'm living up to expectations, so I don't believe that trust is going to be there for them to be able to make
now,
that
Chris,
type of adjustment.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, what I would do if I'm Luke Walton, I would love your idea about bringing one of them off the bench, but what I would do is say, look, I'm going to start you, Ingram or Kuz, I'm going to start you, but I'm going to bring you out early.
Early.
I'm going to take you out with about 6 minutes to go. You're going to still get your start. You're going to still get your minutes out. You're still going to play your 36 minutes, but I'm going to take you out earlier so I can get you with that second unit.
And by the way, that is what they did last night with they brought out Ingram early and then they reinserted him before the end of the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So they did it to a degree, not quite as early as you're talking about. That I can deal with that. I just the what we saw early on yesterday was not that there's a lot of teams with the front court of Anthony Davis, Julius Randle, is with that starting lineup, if the other team has a sentient center, they are going to kill you. They're going to, because they have too much size. You can't ask LeBron and Kuzma to defend two bigs.
Clearly the rotation, or none of this means that much if LeBron doesn't go out and start putting up numbers consistently over the course of the next 20-22 games. Do you think right now LeBron James is the best player in the NBA?
Yes, I still believe he's the best player in the NBA. No player can do what he does on a night-in, night-out basis. The triple-doubles, the impact that he has on the game, on a team from wins and losses, he's still the best player. Is it the gap getting closer? Yes, but it's getting close by a couple guys. It's not like one guy's like, I don't think Kevin Durant's that much better than Giannis. I don't believe that. You know, if Anthony Davis was playing and could stay healthy, Anthony Davis could be considered in that conversation of top three, four players in the league. So I think that. But LeBron James is still the best player in the NBA.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people like to take that away from him now because the team is not doing as well. But people got to understand it. He missed 18 games for the first time in his career.
Right. And at this age, we've never seen it. And when you get that type of injury, Steph had the same type of injury. Now, we don't know to what degree and everything. Steph came back, I think, after 11 games. At this stage of LeBron's career, he showed us for the first time that he is human. But we also have to give credit to what we've seen in a great NBA. I said there's four players. There's five players playing better basketball than LeBron James, all right? Paul George.
You left him.
Best basketball of his career. Harden. I mean, how many 30-point games do you need in a row to say I'm the best player in the world? Giannis has stepped up his game with the new coaching, his ability to be able to get to the rim and an improved jump shot. Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, all five of those players in 2019, because LeBron got hurt before it turned 19, they have played better than LeBron. This will be determined based on the playoffs and who gets to that championship.
All those guys are having better seasons than LeBron. It's why LeBron's going to finish outside of the top five of the MVP for the first time in over a decade. He's not going to be first-team All-NBA, I would imagine, for the first time in a record 11 consecutive seasons. I still believe, and I think that our eyes tell us, he's still better than everybody. Those guys have played better. There isn't a single team on that list that would be better, that wouldn't be better, if they switched out that guy with LeBron right now. Not LeBron over the course of the season because he's missed time, but Milwaukee would rather have LeBron than Giannis. Houston would rather have LeBron than Harden. Golden State would rather have LeBron than either one of those guys.
Let's see.
KD and Paul George on the Lakers because their ability to be able to stretch the defense would make the Lakers better.
Than LeBron?
Yes.
KD and, okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's a tough argument.
Okay. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.